Well, hello, everyone. I saw Lynn take the mic, and I thought she was going to speak, but then I didn't hear anything. So, Lynn, I don't know if you dropped the mic or not, but typically you say thank you to Lori. So I'll say thank you, Lori. And then you introduce me, so I'll introduce myself. Hi, y'all, I'm here. And I'm here for the 7 Steps teaching. So it's nice to see you all. Yeah, I thought that you were going to say that you thought you were talking. That's what I thought you were going to say. Is there something you want to say, Lynn? Do you want me to let go of the mic and let you take it? But I thought that maybe you thought you had the mic and didn't. Okay. So before I get started, just a couple of things I want to say. First of all, the next 2 Sundays in a row, I will not be here because I'm traveling. Next week, I will be in New York City. And then the week after that, I will be in New Jersey outside of Philadelphia. So Teddy Poppy has offered to come and take this time frame in the room. Now, of course, he won't be teaching the 7 steps, but he will be here the next 2 weeks in a row. So please come listen to Teddy. Also, I want to remind you that next week after Teddy, so Teddy will be here at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. After Teddy at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, Nikki will be here with our guest for our monthly satsang. And our guest this time is a man who is a disciple of Amma, the hugging saint, lives in India with her at her ashram. And let's see, I can get his name. Hold on 1 second here. I think Nikki sent it to me. His name is Ram Das Batchelder, B-A-T-C-H-E-L-D-E-R. So Ram Das Batchelder. And I will be making a post this week introducing him. But please also come next Sunday night and listen to Nikki and Ram Das for our monthly satsang. Maybe the other thing that I want to say is this morning when I was teaching during the weekly gathering, I mentioned to you all that I could feel the beginning of a cold coming on. And I talked about how when we are really focused on the fact that what we are is life, not human, that every human experience can be really enjoyed. And I was giving the example of how the tickle in the throat and the scratchy eyes and all of that can be enjoyed because, you know, that's a purely human experience. As I mentioned, apples don't get colds. I said, I don't even know that dogs in that way get colds, you know. So when we're getting a cold, it's such a human experience, and we aren't human. Human is a temporary experience, so we can really embrace that experience. In fact, I know I've mentioned this before, but one of the Cinderella movies, I don't remember the name of it. I think it's just Ella. Ella, where Cinderella somehow ends up in New York City in our day and time. And in that movie, there's a scene where she's having a fight with her boyfriend, and she gets very, very angry at first, and then she stops and goes, oh, so this is what anger feels like. And she gets all excited because she's having a human experience of anger, which is something that I guess in Storyland, you know, she's never had that experience before. So now she's having the experience of being human, and it's wonderful. And I was saying that, you know, the Amy Adams film, Barb says. So I was saying that, you know, really every human experience, when we realize that we're not human, but we're having a temporary experience of being human, every human experience can really be embraced. Well, I tell all of this long story just to say that as the day has gone on, the cold has advanced, and now the stage that I'm in is that stage where I just want to be curled up, covered up, and sleeping, or maybe very lazily halfway watching something on TV, not even fully paying attention. I've watched my family members. I've watched Jasmine and Ron go through the stage, and Danielle, I didn't see her go through it, but she said that she did. I think I didn't see her because she had to go to work anyway, but she said she went through it. So I'm at that stage now, and I'm sitting here with an Afghan on my lap, and I have a sweater on, and I have a hot cup of tea, and I don't feel as motivated as usual. So we'll see how that goes. But I did have some stories. Michael Langford sent me some stories this morning, and I had told him that maybe I would share those stories this evening. And now that I am feeling so cozy, stories sounds like a good way to get started, at least get this ball rolling. So I think we'll have story time. Does that sound okay to you guys? 7-step story time. And I usually start with music. And I'm going to start with music again, but along with the theme of 7-step story time, the song that I'm going to play is actually a story. So if you listen to the words, you're going to hear a story told in this song. This song is by MC Yogi, which maybe some of you know. And the name of the song is Truth Seeker. So why don't we start with this short little song?
One, two, it goes like this, yeah. There was once a yogi, a young truth seeker, devotee of his guru, loved by his teacher. One day the teacher said to all who were gathered, the truth is in everything, proclaimed the master. Once you clear the mind, then you will see God shines in everything, has everything. When the yogi heard this, he became drunk, intoxicated on the bliss, seeing God in everyone. As he wandered from the ashram inside his head, he could hear the voice of his teacher and the words he said. As he wandered through the jungle, a man exclaimed, there's a wild elephant on the rampage. The yogi smiled and said, don't worry, my friend, my guru told me God shines in everything. As he wandered down the road, more voices began. Oh yogi, don't you know disaster's at hand? The yogi said, don't worry, my guru, he told me God shines in everything, has everything. The yogi continued on the path like a fool, chanting the words that he heard spoken by his guru. Then out of nowhere the mad elephant appeared, making everybody disappear. When the elephant saw him, he grabbed him with his trunk, swaying side to side. He picked the yogi up, kicking up dust, he threw him across the sky. During his fall with the tree, the yogi began to cry, broken even deeper, his ego was bruised. So the yogi crawled back to find his guru. Entering the ashram, he said, Guruji has told me God is in everything, is everything. But in the jungle, an elephant trampled me, threw me around, smashed me and thrashed me. The guru said, didn't anyone inform you along the path, did they stop to warn you? The yogi said, yes indeed, they did, Guruji. But he just said, God is in them. God is in everything, only love is real. But you still gotta learn how to navigate the field. And that's real. True seeker, student of the teacher, a follower of truth, a true believer, channeling truth to the youth through the speakers. This is dedicated to all true seekers. True seeker, student of the teacher, a follower of truth, a true believer, channeling truth to the youth through the speakers. This is dedicated to all true seekers.
I love that song. I'm not much of a rap fan usually, but there are a few rap songs that I like, and that's one of them. I love that song. Just in case there were some of you that have trouble listening to the words in rap music, because I know that happens for some people, I'll briefly tell you the story. This yogi went to his guru, and his guru told him that God is in everything. And so he's walking along, remembering his guru's words, and somebody comes and tells him there's a mad elephant loose on his rampage, headed this way, you know, take cover. And the yogi says, you know, I don't have to do that. My guru told me God's in everything. And I think somebody else came along and again told him, you know, you better take cover. And he's like, I don't have to do that. And then the elephant came along, and it says the elephant actually even picked him up and threw him around a bit and trampled him a little bit. And it broke some of his bones, even. But it says that what it bruised the most, it bruised his ego. So he crawled back to his yogi and says, Guruji, what happened? You told me that God is in everything, and yet this elephant, you know, he tore me up. And the guru says, didn't anyone warn you that the elephant was coming? And he says, yes, yes, they did. And he says, well, God is in them too, you see. And, you know, I love that song because I think that many of us have gone through a phase, and maybe some of us are still in the phase. Many of us have gone through a phase where we read teachings that tell us the world is an illusion. And then somehow we get a little idiotic about it. In fact, they called this yogi a fool in the song. We get a little foolish about it in that we cease to pay attention to the practical things that we still need to pay attention to in this world. I once heard a story of a course student. I don't know if it's true or not, but it's a good example. I once heard a story of a course student who began practicing driving with his eyes closed. I don't know the rest of that story. I don't know if he only did it for a second or what happened. But, you know, that kind of stuff is maybe a little bit on the silly side. And I think that's what happens when we understand truth at an intellectual. Maybe we don't even understand. We think we understand truth at an intellectual level, but we don't have a true experience of truth. Somehow, based on my limited experience, and it is very limited, and I will say that, but there's definitely shifts that have occurred, and my way of seeing the world and my way of being with the world is very different than prior to the spiritual path, and very different than even prior to the beginning of the spiritual path. And my experience is that it's kind of being able to be here without taking it so seriously. You know, like if a cold comes on, you know, I might still put on a sweater. I might still, treat myself a little more gentler, you know, a little more gently than usual. I've taken a little bit of the cold ease today, so it's like, but at the same time, not taking the cold in the way I once upon a time would have. This is just another one of these marvelous temporary experiences that we get to have while we're having the temporary experience of being human. But we aren't human. This isn't reality. This doesn't last forever. What we are is forever. So it's the ability to embrace the experience and let the experience be what the experience is, without taking it all so seriously, I guess. I guess that's a good way to say it. It kind of reminds me of, in Michael Langford's book, The Most Direct Means to Eternal Bliss, near the end, when he's giving the meditation instructions. You know, one of the meditation instructions is something like not being distracted by what's going on around us or by what thoughts are in our mind, not being distracted, but continuing to focus on awareness, watching awareness, no matter what comes up, right? Just stay focused on awareness, watching awareness, no matter what seems to be coming up. But then he makes a comment, something like, but if the smoke detectors, if the smoke detectors in your house go off, or a fire alarm, I don't remember which word he uses, but he says, you know, get up and go check and see if there's a fire. Or if you think you might be having a heart attack, call 911. And I think it's funny that he even has to put those instructions in his book, The Most Direct Means to Eternal Bliss, but that shows how foolish we can become, like this yogi who didn't get out of the way when a mad elephant was coming. It's interesting to find that place of practicality. I heard another story once about a friend. Two friends needed to get together and do something. And I don't know, they lived a little ways from each other. I don't know how far. I'll make up a number, 7 miles from each other. And so one friend wanted to make an appointment, you know, we'll get together like, let's say 10 a.m. Saturday morning. And the other one says, oh no, a healed mind doesn't plan. When you feel, if you feel the prompt to come over here, you just come when you feel it. And if I feel the prompt to come over there, I'll just come when I feel it. And so they agreed to that. And what ended up happening is around the same time, they both got up and went to the other one's house. And so one was at one's house and the other one was at the other's house, and they weren't together, you know. So there's nothing wrong with practicality. There's nothing wrong with looking both ways before you cross the street. If you're walking around here, there's nothing wrong with keeping your eyes open for rattlesnakes while you're walking around. If you're walking through India and someone tells you a mad elephant is on a rampage, there's nothing wrong with taking cover like everyone else, getting out of the way, getting off the path. So I love it. You know, I just love it. We need, unfortunately, to remember that practicality has a place on the spiritual path as well. It's finding that space where we're in the world but not of the world. In the world but not of the world. Yeah, common sense. Common sense. I always joke, you know, what if somebody decided I am not the body, therefore I will never pee or poop again. I am not the body. And then, of course, the urge to pee and poop begins to come. I am not the body. I'm not going to pee and poop again. And pretty soon you're having to struggle to hold in that pee and poop, right? And at some point, I suppose it's going to come out, you know, because it's just not going to work. You know, why be so foolish? Why be so foolish? I remember when I was a kid, one of my favorite television characters was, oh, don't tell me I've forgotten his name, Beverly Hillbillies, Jed Clampett. I love Jed Clampett because Jed Clampett had no education, remember? But he had such strong common sense. And I always appreciated that common sense. And Craiborne, I see that you want to take the mic, but this, even though this appears to be like many of the other chat rooms in Pal Talk, this room is a little different. This is a sanctuary, and we don't always share the mic here like they do in some of the other rooms. So, but feel free to continue typing your comments. I do have my eye on them as I'm speaking. I am a little tired, as I mentioned, and so I'm just going to go ahead and surrender to that. And even though I am going to share some stories, and I will be sharing from the Seven Steps to Awakening, I'm actually ready for another break. So I'm going to play another song. This next song is also by MC Yogi. I have a really nice song that I'm not going to play, Buddha. It's the story of Buddha, but it's a little longer than I want to take right now. So I'm going to play a shorter song. This song is not a story, but it's just a nice, nice song. And I can sit back and relax while we listen to it. This song by MC Yogi is called Give Love.
Whenever I let it in, love is the power that
Yeah, as I mentioned this morning, I love to listen to spiritual music. I do it a minimum of an hour a day. And Craiborne, I changed my mind. You shared enough of your story that I would love to hear your story on the mic. So Craiborne, I'm going to let go of the mic for you. Please tell us your story.
We'll start with that complicated story. It was just simply... it was kind of a change of plan. Instead of raising hogs, we were raising cattle. And all of a sudden, we had about 10 cows, steers, and female things. And they come running down the chute. And apparently, this is how you haze people, I guess, in my family. Like, stand your ground, they're all yelling at me and everything. I was trying, like, hell no! I jumped over the fence. But then I found out that actually my uncle and, like, my family's friends and everything, they were all backing up my brother and my father. And I just had to take that, you know, straight on. I was like, hell no! So, yeah, I don't know, it's not a very good story, but, long story short, they got within 10 feet of me, and I jumped out of the way. It's almost like running with the bulls over there in Spain.
Thank you, Craiborne. It was nice to hear your voice. I enjoyed that very much. So thank you very much for sharing your little story. I noticed Lori is asking, how do you find songs like that one, Regina? That particular song, I think somebody posted on my Facebook page once upon a time. I take that back. Someone told me about it, I think, at a gathering. Susie, I don't really remember. You know, people tell me about songs. I see them on Facebook. Sometimes I want a new song, and I'll just go into iTunes, and I might type in a word like awakening, or I might type in like love of God, or I might type in spirit and just see what songs come up and play them a little bit. And if I see one I like, I download it. So there's different ways that songs come my way. Now, as I mentioned, we are here for Seven Steps to Awakening, even though we're doing things a little slower tonight than usual. And in this series of Seven Steps to Awakening, I am on step 3, which means I'm on quote number 640, and we might get to quote number 640 tonight. We'll see how it goes. But Michael Langford has been listening to some of the Seven Steps audios that I recently posted, and he sent me an email this morning related to quote number 506. Quote number 506 is near the end of step 2. That's where the stories come from. They're related to quote number 506. So I'm going to backtrack a little bit and go back to 506, and then maybe we'll jump forward to 640. Now, let me see who quote 506 is from. Let me turn these pages back a little bit. A lot of pages here. It might be Nisargadatta. Usually there's a lot of quotes from him in every single step. Nope, this is the Supreme Yoga, Yoga Vasistha. So Yoga Vasistha is where quote 506 comes from. Here's quote 506. Like a frog in the blind well, foolish and ignorant people base their understanding on the experience of the moment, and on account of their perverse understanding, they are deluded into thinking that the body alone is the source of experience or awareness. Let me read that quote to you one more time. Like a frog in the blind well, foolish and ignorant people base their understanding on the experience of the moment, and on account of their perverse understanding, they are deluded into thinking that the body alone is the source of experience or awareness. And when I was sharing this quote the first time, I commented that I didn't know what the first part of this quote meant, like a frog in the blind well. So Michael Langford sent me the story today, and so I'm going to read the story to you from his email. Imagine a well. an old-fashioned well with a wall around it that people lower a bucket into to get water. You've probably seen pictures of this type of well in some old Western movie. There is a frog that is born in that well. Because the frog was born in that well and has lived its whole life in that well, the only world that the frog knows is what he can see from the bottom of that well. He sees walls, water at the bottom, light at the top. One day, another frog from the world outside the well hops onto the wall of the well. He says hello to the frog in the well. The outside frog tells the well frog about the vast world outside the well. The frog in the well says, "You're crazy. This well is the world. There is no other world." The outside frog says, "I am not crazy. There is a huge world outside this well." The well frog says, "If you are not crazy, then you are deluded. I was not born yesterday. I know that this well is the only world." The outside frog says, "I am not deluded. There is a vast world outside of this well." The well frog says, "If you are not deluded, then you are just plain wrong. Wrong, 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 wrong. Hear me now, loud and clear. This well is the only world. There is no other world." And that's the end of the story. So now that we've listened to the story, let's look at the quote again. "Like a frog in the blind well, foolish and ignorant people base their understanding on the experience of the moment and, on account of their perverse understanding, they are deluded into thinking that the body alone is the source of experience or awareness." So, you know, this lifetime, I am 54 years old. In August, I'll be 55 years old. The only memory that I really, well, this isn't 100% true in my case. Primarily, the only memory that I have is the memory of being this person of Regina. As you guys know, I did have the brief experience of being an apple. And I've had a couple of interesting memories that might be memories of prior lifetimes, though I don't know that for sure. They might have just been some brain thing, that happened. But they might have been memories from a prior lifetime. But other than those few short experiences, you know, the only thing that I really know on a day-to-day basis is being Regina. And so what seems to happen, and I know you all know this for most people, is because this is the experience. You know, in my case, Regina, in your case, you know, another person. But since this is the experience, we can come to believe this is what I am. This is all that is true, right? And not only that, but we look around at the world around us, however we perceive it, and we think that this world is reality. Well, I'll tell you another experience that I've had, and I won't go into a lot of detail because it doesn't feel appropriate, but another experience that I've had is experiencing the world as a couple of other people. I had the experience once or twice, I think, when I experienced the world as Laurent. And the reason I know that the experience was correct was because I described the experience to him and he told me, yes, that's how he sees the world. That's his experience of the world. And what was very, very interesting about having a mystical experience where I experienced the world as Laurent is that Laurent's world was extremely different from my world. Extremely different. And then I had a dream once where I experienced the world as Danielle. And again, the way Danielle sees the world and experiences the world is very, very different from the way Regina sees and experiences the world. So thanks to my experiences with Laurent and with Danielle, and I guess having a close enough relationship with them that you know, Spirit wanted me to see how they see so that I would have an understanding of it. I know that we as people do not see the world anywhere in the same way. We don't experience the world at all in the same way. And what's interesting is unless we've had the pleasure to have those experiences or to be told about those experiences and trust that other people experience the world in a very different way, we think my way of experiencing the world is the way the world is. So now we have a couple of deluded points of view going on. One deluded point of view is I am this person, Regina. Another deluded point of view is that the world that I experience is reality. And both of those things are completely wrong. Let me read quote number 506 again. Like a frog in the blind well, foolish and ignorant people base their understanding on the experience of the moment. And on account of their perverse understanding, they are deluded into thinking that the body alone is the source of experience or awareness. And most of us on this spiritual path, you know, we might say something different. You know, like we might say, I know I am not a body. We might say, I know I am eternal. But often the way that we choose to live our lives proves that we're just as ignorant as we've always been. The choices that we make when, you know, things, quote, go wrong in our life or when somebody says something that we don't like or, you know, when there's something coming that we can't understand and it's fearful to us, we fall into those conditioned patterns, that come from believing I am this and the world that I see is reality. And now, based on this current circumstance, I need to act or react in this way, all of that conditioning. And so the way that we live our life, regardless of what we say with our mouth, the way that we live our life proves that we still think that the world that we experience is reality and that I am this person and my safety has to do with whatever it is that I'm about to do or say. This is how I'm going to protect myself. Michael Langford told me a couple other stories. That's why I was pausing for a moment. I was wondering if it was time to go and read one of those stories, but I don't think it is yet. Another thing that Michael Langford said in his email was, now that the story of the frog is known, maybe it would be helpful to go back and contemplate quote number 506 again. Maybe there would be, a more full understanding of the quote. And so I think I feel like instead of going to the other stories, I think I feel like setting with that for a moment. I think I just feel like setting with the understanding that Regina's world belongs to Regina alone. That the way she sees the world is only the way she sees the world. Oh, I'll share the other stories. And by the way, I think I want to know how to say your name, whether it's Kanan or Canon. I don't know. Maybe you can send me a pronunciation in email, Student of Awareness. I want to know how to say your name before Wednesday. I want to sit and contemplate for a moment. Just be with is what I mean. I just want to be with that realization that the way Regina sees the world is both individual and deluded. Individual and deluded. And this isn't new for me. I mean, this is something that, of course, I've been looking at for years. And one way that you can tell that this sinks in a little more and a little more as we start taking our own point of view less and less seriously. when there's someone, you know, for example, my boyfriend, like everyone else, I don't know how he sees the world. I haven't had a mystical experience of seeing the world through his eyes. But I know from being close to him that he sees the world differently than I do. I know by how he reacts to the world. I know by the decisions he makes. Because if he saw the world exactly as I do, he would react differently and make different decisions. So I know that he lives in a different world. And so what's happened is I've come to realize more and more that I'm going to call it my world, my little individual world, is really nothing but a single point of view that has no validity at all. One way that I react then is by surrendering that point of view much faster, by going with his decisions, going with what he sees as important. Just backing off. You know, one little example is Jasmine will be going to college soon, and she recently got her financial offer from a university that she wants to go to. And my boyfriend wants to call the university and negotiate. In his world, it's foolish not to call the university and negotiate, because if you call the university and negotiate, you might get a better price and pay less money. And it's foolish not to do that. In my world, he's not even a family member. You know, who is this guy calling the school and negotiating on our behalf? And actually the deal they've offered is acceptable to me. I think, you know, I'll have to, as they say, tighten my belt strap for a few years, but I think that, you know, we can make this work and I'm satisfied, and you're two different worlds. Once upon a time, I would have been angry at him. I would have been certain that I was right. I would have been forcing my point of view on him. After all, this is more my and Jasmine's business than his, and blah, 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 blah. And now I'm just letting him do what he's going to do, and whatever comes of it will come of it, and then we'll go from there. You see? My point of view is not more important or more right than his point of view. And typically, that's what we all think. We think, the way I see, the way I think, is more right than the way you see, than the way you think. And I think what this quote is telling us is that we're all wrong. We're all like that frog in the well. We're all looking from a very limited, perverse is the word that the Supreme Yoga uses, perverse point of view. And when we're fighting for our way, fighting for our point of view, fighting that we are right, we're just believing our own delusion. Let me read the quote one more time, and then I'll share some more stories. Here's quote 506. Like a frog in the blind well, foolish and ignorant people base their understanding on the experience of the moment, and on account of their perverse understanding, they are deluded into thinking that the body alone is the source of experience or awareness. One more time. Because, you know, we can hear this and we can know it's true, but many of us are going to walk away and go right back into believing, I am this person, this is my life, the way that I see the world is the right way to see the world. We're going to do it. Even though we'll speak differently, we'll say, I know I am not this body, I know I am not this person, we're going to fall right back into that conditioning groove. And so I think it's okay to spend a bit of time with this out-of-order quote, number 506. Again, like a frog in the blind well, foolish and ignorant people base their understanding on the experience of the moment, and on account of their perverse understanding, they are deluded into thinking that the body alone is the source of experience or awareness. All right, so let me read another story from Michael's email. Here we go. A monkey has a conversation with a tree. The tree asks the monkey, How did you get here? You must have grown here quickly, because I did not even see you sprout. The monkey tells the tree, I did not sprout. I walked here. The tree says to the monkey, you must be kidding. You are saying that you can move about from place to place? If you did that, your roots would be exposed to the sun and air, and you would die. The monkey was never able to convince the tree that it could move from place to place, because for the tree, that was just too far-fetched. You see, the tree there is giving a perfect example of what it's like to believe our point of view, to believe how we've always seen the world. In fact, I think this story about the tree is so good, I'm actually going to read the story about the tree again, so we can listen again and realize this isn't just a story. I mean, in a way it is, but it's pointing to how most of us act at some point, if not regularly. As if the way I see the world is the way the world is, the way I think is right. My experience of the world is the only valid experience of the world. A monkey has a conversation with a tree. The tree asks the monkey, how did you get here? You must have grown here quickly, because I did not even see you sprout. The monkey tells the tree, I did not sprout. I walked here. The tree says to the monkey, you must be kidding. You are saying that you can move about from place to place? If you did that, your roots would be exposed to the sun and air, and you would die. The monkey was never able to convince the tree that it could move place to place, because for the tree, that was just too far-fetched. And then Michael makes a comment about a story that I've shared with you before that's in his book about the most direct means to eternal bliss. It's the story about the people who were born and raised in a movie theater, and they thought that movie theater was life. So a part of the way that I contemplate is that I go into inquiry when I'm contemplating. If I was alone over there in the chair, I would probably start writing some questions now and looking at those questions, you know. And so one of the questions that I might ask myself is, you know, where do I still think I'm right? Where do I still think my ideas are good judgment based on the way I believe the world is? I mean, I might even start listing some of those things. And the reason that I do that is so that I can really look at it, right? Really look at it. Because our foolishness, our ignorance, continues in unawareness. That's what darkness is, in unawareness. But if we take the time to kind of step back and ask the question, you know, where do I still act like the tree or the frog in the well? And if we ask that question, especially with a devotional heart and an open mind, some ideas, some very specific ideas may begin to come. We may begin to see. It's brought into our awareness here and here and here. And suddenly something that was hidden is no longer hidden. We can begin to look at our own ignorance. And you realize that when we look at our own ignorance, we're not looking with ignorance. It's our wisdom that looks in our own ignorance. We are shifting away from the ignorant acting out of conditioning to our wisdom when we set back and ask and let it be revealed and then look at it. Then we are abiding as ourselves. We are abiding as awareness, and we're letting our awareness shine on our ignorance. And that can be the beginning of the end of our ignorance. There was one more story in the email. A master and disciple are walking. They see some fish. The master says, "The fish are happy." The disciple says, "You are not a fish. So how do you know if the fish are happy or not?" The master says, "You are not me. So you do not know what I do or do not know." When I read that story, what happens for me is that, again, I want to go back and I want to look at my I know mind. I want to go back and look at everything that I think I know, everything that I think I'm right about, everything that I define about the world, everything that I define about you, who I think you are. I want to look at all of it and let it go. Because it seems that if I hold to what I think I know, I'm putting myself, well, I started to say in a box, but then the picture of the well popped into my mind. I'm putting myself in a well. It seems that just letting go and being open to the mystery, continuing to let go, getting to where I can honestly say I don't know anything. I am just being here. And then letting wisdom reveal to me whatever wisdom wants to reveal. You know, maybe wisdom revealed to this master that said the fish are happy. Because maybe he was empty enough that there could be a revealing there. That the one who knows is closed to that revealing. I know I've had many, many experiences of revealing. I know that knowledge has come to me in a very spontaneous way that does not make sense because it was not Regina's intellectual knowledge, and yet it was provided when it was needed. So I know that knowledge in the moment can be given that has nothing to do with the I know mind. But I also know that the I know mind is the block to that knowledge. This one is called a master in this last story, so maybe this one was empty enough that this one did know the fish are happy, because this one was not coming from the I know mind. This one was coming from the openness. I'm going to read 506 one more time, and then I'm going to go ahead and move on up to 640. So 506, like a frog in the blind well, foolish and ignorant people base their understanding on the experience of the moment, and on account of their perverse understanding, they are deluded into thinking that the body alone, not only the body alone, but, you know, my body alone, is the source of experience or awareness. And I'm sure there's more to look at in 506, just like there's more to look at in each of these quotes. And I appreciate the invitation to go back and look one more time, even briefly and quickly. Typically, when I contemplate a quote, I spend more time with it alone than we just now did together. So I feel like I'm not done with the quote. But I also feel to move on, so I'm going to do that. I'm going to move on to 640. Is in the Seven Steps to Awakening on page 110. This is also the Supreme Yoga. I, that's in quotes, mine, that's in quotes, etc., have no existence at all. The one self alone is the truth at all times. You know what I think we have here in this quote? I think we have the frog that's sitting on the wall at the top of the well, telling us about reality. I think that's what we have in this quote. Listen again. Imagine, we're the frog inside the well. We think we know what's true. I think I am this person. I think the world I experience is the world. I think everybody experiences the same world as me. I have a very limited point of view. And then Yoga Vasistha comes along and says, I, mine, etc., have no existence at all. The one self alone is the truth at all times. Now, of course, I'm the frog in the well, and I say, what do you mean I have no existence? That's ridiculous. My God, if I know anything, it's that I have existence. You know, I was born in 1960 in Coffeyville, Kansas. My mom named me after her high school best friend, Regina. My middle name came from my father, Don. You know, my grandma lived on a farm not far away. A year later, I had a brother. You know, we moved from Coffeyville to Topeka, and I went to first and second grade in Topeka, and then we moved to Hutchinson, and blah, 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 blah. I was in the Air Force for 10 years, blah, 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 blah. I have a dog. I mean, don't tell me I don't exist. I have a lifetime of memories. I know. I know. I know. My God, I experienced it directly. What the heck are you talking about, frog on the wall? What are you? You're crazy. You must be crazy. You're wrong, 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 wrong. Hear me loud and clear. I exist. Yoga Vasistha says, I, mine, etc., have no existence at all. The one self alone is the truth at all times. You know, are we going to stay the frog in the well? Or are we going to go ahead and say to that frog on the wall, you know what, can you find a way to lower that bucket down to me and maybe I can hop in that bucket and then maybe you can help me back up out of this well? Maybe with your help. Oh, wise frog, I mean, I can't understand what you're talking about, wise frog. I admit it is completely alien to my experience, wise frog, but yet I see that you're on the wall. I can tell that you're on the wall. And I'm willing to trust you, wise frog, and let you help me up on the wall. If you give me instructions, some kind of direction, if you ask me to do a certain thing, I will do what you ask me to do. Because I want to be up on the wall with you. And then wherever it is that you go when you leave that wall, I want to go with you. Some of you may know that's kind of, to a point, how I started the spiritual path. I was reading Peace Pilgrim. And when I read her stories, I saw that she knew something I didn't know. Her experience was completely, completely alien to my experience. She talked about oneness. I knew nothing about oneness. The only experience I had was the experience of separation. I mean, it's very obvious to me that my body is sitting here in Pueblo, and there's Dolores talking about the frog on the wall, but heck, I think she's on the East Coast somewhere. I don't even know exactly where Dolores is, but I've never met Dolores in person. It is clear to me that Dolores and I are separate. She has an entirely different life than I have, right? But yet when Peace Pilgrim spoke as the frog on the wall, even though I could in no way understand her, something in me said, bring me to where you are. I want to see like you see. I want to know what you know. You know something I don't know. I'm going to go ahead and go to the journal in the few minutes that we have left. I'm going to read the journal entry for number 640. It says, busyness of mind is preoccupation with I, person self? What is the truth? What am I? Why would I want to be preoccupied by an illusion, identified with a temporary speck, when I can know myself as infinite life, the only truth, by simply abandoning the idle prattle of mind? It's interesting how this hour is unfolding, because it looks like this 640, as it's entered in the journal, it looks like this 640 is again that decision to say, you know what, maybe I would like to get out of this well. Maybe I'm ready to stop believing my point of view so much. Maybe I'm ready to quit investing my belief and interest into this thinking that happens in my own mind so much. You know, I kind of get it to the degree that I can, that I'm in a well, and that there's more than this. I can't really imagine what's outside of this well, but I kind of get it that somehow I'm missing something. It's a disservice to myself. I am in disservice to myself by continuing to go along, believing my stories, believing my point of view, thinking I'm right about everything. My God, it's actually starting to feel like heavy armor, like I'm wearing this heavy, heavy, heavy armor. And it's even beginning to feel like the mask on the heavy armor is closed, and I'm starting to notice I can't breathe. I'm starting to notice that I feel claustrophobic, and I don't think I have to. I don't think I have to stay here. I think there's a way out. But I think that way out means giving up everything I've ever believed. And I think maybe I'm beginning to get really ready, truly ready, to stop just talking spirituality, but start stepping out of my mold, out of my groove, out of my conditioning. Busyness of mind is preoccupation with I, person self. What is the truth? What am I? Why would I want to be preoccupied by an illusion, identified with a temporary speck, stuck down in this well, when I can know myself as infinite life, the only truth, by simply abandoning the idle prattle of mind? And that's it for tonight. Actually, I'll be back in 2 hours for the daily quote, but that's it for the 7 steps teaching. Thanks for being here for story time, y'all. Remember, next 2 weeks I won't be here, but Teddy will be. And I'll see you guys again in 3 weeks, okay? Bye-bye.
Okay, wonderful, heartful sharing, Regina, and I hope you feel better.